try. Fresh kid turned rotten. I can't believe how naive that I've gotten. Over the years, seems like I'm getting dumber. Reminiscing to a time when I was younger with a hunker. Full of dreams, determination, self-esteem. But now it seems they hesitate to be on my team. You know the routine. When you win and they grin all up in your face like they was with you from the beginning. But on the flip side, when you watch them like a riptide, fools climb by, you slipped and let shit slide. Beside the fact, my voice is whack. Clowns is running around, talk about a smoke crack. Ain't got no homies that got my back. Yeah, I'm a brother, but sometimes I don't feel black. My girl is white, my game ain't tight. Niggas who ain't seen me in a while be like, dude, you alright? Who am I kidding? Who am I fooling? When they be like,
what's up, fat lip?
And I say, coolin'. Who am I kidding? Who am I fooling? When they be like,
what's hey, up, everybody. And I say, coolin'. Welcome to another one of these. So, let's just get right into it. I played that song because I wanted to prove that I have a black friend, Fat Lip. Not really. He does not know who I am. Would I be his friend? Probably. I don't know. I have no idea. If his real life is based on this one song, probably. But would I be his friend? Probably not. Because I can't really imagine having a friend, like a new friend. That seems impossible. Regardless of whether or not he's Fat Lip or whatever. You know what's weird? And it just occurred to me, I wonder if anyone does that with this show, which would be real crazy. And you're a sickness. But my best friends are... Oh, God. This is sad. My best friends are like people on other podcasts who I've never met. Like when I'm talking about, you know, when I have the day off or something and Poonmaster Flex is at work and then she comes home... I'm like, you're not going to believe what happened on Tell 'Em Steve Dave today. And, you know, and I just tell him about the guys. She's like, which that's this guy. I tell him about the boys, my boys, the Tell 'Em Steve Dave boys. This is like a real thing, though. It's become a real thing. So if I'm that for you, I'm so fucking sorry for you and you could do better. You know, have some self-esteem. Get on the iTunes store and find somebody who's, like, worth being your friend. Okay. I had some troubled tweets that happened yesterday where I tweeted something that probably... when I tweeted it, I was like, eh, this might be trouble. And then I was like, eh, maybe not. Who cares? And there was some trouble. So I wanted to talk about, I just want to put it all on Front Street, you know, because I was thinking about it and I was just like, this is how I deal with shit. I just talk about it and then it just kind of fades away. So that's the plan. So no attacking, no anger here. So here's what I tweeted. I feel like such a piece of shit. By the way, it's going to be talking about serious topics, but I'm going to try and make this actually funny. And probably will fail. Because, you know, feeling downtrodden. Cool kid turned rotten. Also, it's just hard sometimes, but who knows. So I may do that, but we'll see. I feel like such a loser that it's like, I'm tweeting thing. I'm talking about something I tweeted and then what happened. Like that, this seems so weird, but it's not really about that. It's about something else. Also last night. So, I accidentally stumbled my way into high school Twitter, like people in high school and what they're tweeting and was looking at their accounts. My God. It's all crazy. Like the normalest seeming high school kid, like they have a normal avatar or whatever, is tweeting the craziest fucking shit you've ever seen. And just weird stuff too that I don't, it seems to be apropos of nothing. Like their Twitter, boy, do you feel like an old man, but also, you know, I'm not like someone who's offended. I wouldn't say I was offended by what I saw, but was just surprised. When I was a young man and Facebook was a thing and everyone's like, don't have a picture of you drinking a beer on Facebook. you know, they were like, oh, when you try to get a job, they'll see like, he's had a beer in his life. He probably isn't fit for this job. These people are tweeting things like, I'm just like, oh, what an innocent time. Because these people are tweeting, you know, this kid was tweeting the N-word was every other word. He's not black, by the way. And also, he just tweeted this picture, and it was a guy who had Down syndrome who was wearing a t-shirt that said, at least I'm not an N-word. And it was the actual word. And I was like, where do you buy that shirt? How do you get it? I also wondered, like, I wonder if that dude knows what he's what he's wearing and why that's so fucked up, or if he's just like, who dressed him in that? What's going on? I saw at the parade here one year, there was a Down syndrome guy, and he was on the sidelines of the parade, and he was wearing this t-shirt that said Love Machine. And I have never forgotten that, because I always wondered, like, I wonder what that means to him. I don't know what that, like, what his definition of Love Machine is. Like, he's just like, I love a lot of people. And then whoever was with him was like, oh, fuck it. Like, who cares? Or maybe someone got it for him not knowing what they were doing. I don't know. Like, this has been probably minimum 10 years in the past. And I still think about it probably once a week. This is one of those things that haunts my dreams, is the Love Machine shirt guy. Anyway, high school Twitter's fucked up. And I recommend delving into it just to see what's out there. But I don't know why. We should probably just do it on the show sometime. I need to just find a very high school-ass Twitter and just go for it. But not today. Today, the show is about me, fuckers. So here's what I tweeted. Curious to see what becomes of a generation of straight white men so regularly told they are bad. Now, this caused some conversation, which I'm not going to all go into it, except for, you know, a fan of the show tweeted like, too long, didn't read, they'll get laid anyway, and it was from a OKCupid thing, which basically, reading it is so depressing, because basically it's like, wow, everyone's fucking racist as fuck. Like, I don't know why I'm laughing, because I don't know how else to react to this. Because basically, like, you just look at the way that people score people, and it's like horrific. You know, even people of their own race, like, were scoring, you know, different. Like, Asian men had it pretty bad. It would show a score, so it was like a percent. Plus or minus, not important, except to say, like, this is like about preferences and stuff like that. And so, you know, and the highest, by the way, the highest, like, oh yeah, this would be cool to date this person, is like 17%, which is white women rating white men. That's the highest, is 17%. The lowest is a negative 22, I think, negative 22, which is Latino men rating black women. Which is like, just reading that and seeing that, I was like, huh, I wonder what's going on there. Asian men and black women seem to have it pretty rough. Pretty rough. Also, based on this data, if you were a black man, I would not bother with Asian women. That would be pretty low on the possibilities there. It turns out everyone's basically horribly racist, or at best, neutral. Black women rate white men at 0%, so that's like totally neutral. So I was like, oh, well, that's something. That was in like 2009, I guess. And I think that this is also all in this book, Dataclism, which is a really cool book, because it's about data about a lot of these kinds of topics. But what I like about it, what's interesting about it, is it's about dating preferences. So on the one hand, it's like, well, I don't know, it's just what people are attracted to. But on the other hand, I think it's people being very honest about their feelings. Like, I don't know where else you're going to get the kind of data that says, like, hey, this is how people actually feel, you know, where they're going to see, hey, how do you feel about dating a black woman? And they're like, no thanks, right? But if you just ask someone that, they would probably be like, oh, whatever, you know, because it's not a reality. It's not something they're thinking about. It's not a possibility. So it's easy to just discount. So anyway, there's some discussion about this. And here's what I just wanted. I just wanted some to say some things. Basically, the ending of this whole thing, the summary for me is that I am a straight, white, cisgender man, and I am not a villain. And I do feel like it is okay online to make me the villain of your think piece or your article in a way that's totally not okay to do with any other group. You cannot do this with, you know, women, with gay men, with, you know, a guy from Cuba. And I'm going to give you a few examples of my world and where I'm coming from with this, okay? Now, let's be clear about something. I am not calling reverse racism here. That is not what's happening right now. I am also not complaining about my station in life, and we'll get to that. Although I did, last night, I had a dream where I had done, in the dream, I didn't know what it was. I had done some freelance work of some kind, and I opened a check for $3,000. And I was like, oh my God, that's much more than I thought. This is great. And I got a second check for some other freelance kind of job I did. I don't know what it was. I must have fucking killed somebody in the night, because the second check was also for $3,000. And in this dream, I'm holding these two checks, each for $3,000, so a total of $6,000. Now, $6,000 is not a tiny amount of money. But this was the kind of dream, this is how most people describe like a sex dream, where I was like, I didn't want to wake up, because this was like, this is going to change my life. You know what I mean? I'm going to pay off my loan. This is going to be fucking amazing. And it was just like, I can't believe this is happening right now. I can't believe this is my life. That I'm so lucky as to have $6,000. And you know, when I woke up, I was like, oh, of course, that was too good to be true. I should have known. I blamed myself because I should have known that $6,000 was not, there was no possible way that $6,000 was going to be true. So anyway, I want to give you some examples of what I'm talking about from my world. And here's the thing. Here's the world that I'm coming from, okay? Yes, I am a straight, white, cisgendered male. I work in an extremely female-dominated field. And that is top to bottom. You know, I work in a field where most of the jobs are held by women. And also, you know, my supervisors have been almost exclusively women. The head of my organization has been a woman as long as I've been there. The top two people, in fact. And, you know, and I also hold a position that involves a certain amount of humility. I mean, just today I unclogged a toilet with logs of shit in it, right? And it was like, oh, I hate doing this at work. You know what I hate about it? You're going into a bathroom with like rubber gloves and a plastic bag and all this shit, and everyone's got to be like, oh, that doesn't look good. What's going on? And I'm like, listen, I have to unclog a toilet with huge logs of shit. That's bad enough, okay? Can I just do that and not have to like tell you what I'm doing also? Like, can I just want to go in there, unclog shit, and then just be done with it. I don't really want to tell you about how I'm about to do this thing that I'm not really, that I'm, you know, dreading, that I know I just have to just suck it up and do it. But it doesn't really help me to be like, well, here's what I'm about to do. So just have that image in your mind when I close the door and I'm in there unclogging shit in the bathroom. You know, I really want to make sure that we're all very aware of what I'm doing. So this is the world I come from. Also, a lot of the things I'm referring to when I say that men are, you know, my people, I guess I'll call them for lack of a better term, even though I don't know. for lack of a better term, I also do these news pieces for Lit Reactor. And so that involves looking up a lot of things about books and reading and authors and stuff like that, which is how I come across a lot of this kind of stuff. I come across a lot of books and projects and things about prizes that relate to gender and race and all this kinds of stuff, because this is big news right now. Like, this is a lot of news right now. So this is the world I'm coming from, and why I'm seeing these things, and why I have such a hard time just ignoring that, which is really what I want to do, I think. But let's just go. This is the first one, and I think I talked about this a little bit when I did the reading challenge on this show. This is a reading challenge on XO Jane, and it's called I Challenge You to Stop Reading White, Straight, Cis Male Authors for 1 Year. And basically, you know, this woman explains, like, I think she's like a short story writer, and she writes, like, especially in sci-fi and things like that, and, you know, is like, I'm pretty underrepresented in these groups. Like, people like me are not represented. Totally true. Right? I'm not going to deny that. Here's the thing I don't like about the way this is pitched. Basically, this is about diversity, except there's one very specific category, straight, white, male, cisgendered, that's unwanted here, and that's me. Every diagram that comes together is like, okay, well, that's who I am. And that is the one thing about this is, like, this is the only kind of person you can't engage with in a book this year is me. So there you go. I'm just going to leave that there and just move on. There's this movement called the We Need Diverse Books movement. Now, again, where did this campaign come from? Here's from their website. In a Twitter exchange on April 17th, 2014. See, Twitter is the cause of all these fucking problems. Ellen O and Melinda Lowe Ellen O and Melinda Lowe. That sounds like the title of a kid's book about, you know, mischievous buddies. Ellen O and Melinda Lowe expressed their frustration with the lack of diversity in Kidlit. This wasn't a new conversation for Ellen or Melinda, just the latest, this time in response to the all-white, all-male panel of children's authors assembled for BookCon's May 31st reader event. In a series of tweets, Ellen started talking about taking action. Several other authors, bloggers, and industry folks piped up saying they would like to be involved as well. Now, I think this is an example of, like, yes, I think promoting diversity is great. But this is an example of what I'm talking about when I say, when I see the word diversity, being who I am, when I see the word diversity online, I am trained to see that as everybody except you. Diversity is all-inclusive except for you. That's what I see when I see diversity. Because again, their problem is the all-white, all-male panel of children's authors. By the way, this is BookCon, which is attached to BEA, which I went to this year. It's 2 years later. And I did go to a panel that had all-white, all-male authors. It had 3 authors on it, and they were all white men. However, I went to 3 other panels that were all reps from publishing houses. So I went to 3 other panels. Each of those had 4 reps from these publishing houses. That's 12 people, 1 man. 1 out of 12 was a man on those panels. And I thought it was really weird because at, like, BEA, Book Expo America, I saw my observation. Men, when it comes to the world of books, men care when they're on the commerce side, when they're writing books, when they work for a publisher, that kind of stuff. Women are definitely the primary consumers. When you looked at the floor, this, you know, the expo floor and stuff like that, I would say it was pretty close to 50-50. Like, the people staffing the booths and stuff, It was pretty close to 50-50 men, women. When you looked at the attendees, not even close. There were the ratio of men to women. I mean, it had to be at least 5 to 1. It was like reverse Comic-Con. And I mean, like old time Comic-Con, when it was like, there was a time when Comic-Con was, you know, in a Holiday Inn basement ballroom where you could see the other side from where you were standing. And it was just card tables with long boxes of comics on them. And there were usually a couple women. And usually it was like, you know, a couple women who were interested in comics and a couple super bored looking girlfriends who were there with their boyfriends. This was like the reverse of that, you know, where you kind of just saw the reverse. And this is like my world, you know, and I think that the thing I have to recognize, but the thing that also makes this so challenging for me, is that I think the world that I'm told about with these diverse books and with the straight cis male da-da-da-da is like, that doesn't really resemble the world that I live in, the world that I work in. You know, it doesn't, I don't know, that's something that just doesn't, the reality presented there, I understand, is reality, but it's also like in contradiction to my reality, which is working in a place where, you know, I'm making the same as my coworkers and they're all female. And then, you know, I have people above and below who are mostly women, and I'm cleaning up shit and so on. So the thing is I guess like my original question about like what becomes of this generation that's this way, it's not a call about like, hey, reverse racism, or like, hey, quit picking on white guys. I don't think that's the question or the thing that I'm saying. I think the thing that I'm saying is like, I feel that it's become a cultural, acceptable, mainstream norm to make straight white men a villain in your think piece, in your blog, in your tweet. You know what I mean? Whether it be a joke or serious or whatever, I think it's become kind of a cultural norm that it's okay to do that to that group. And like, you know, there's this author, John Scalzi, who is like a sci-fi author. And he wrote this blog that's basically, it was like, straight being a straight white male is the lowest difficulty setting in life. And it was, I think it was kind of his way of explaining what privilege is, right? Like you play a video game like Doom, and it's like, you know, super simple difficulty. There's barely any bad guys and whatever, you know? And he's like, you can still fuck up, you can still die, but just getting through is a lot easier. And then, you know, for other people, like if you're a gay Cuban, why do I keep saying Cuban? I don't even know. Okay. You're a gay Cuban man living in America, like the difficulty is ratcheted up. And like they have to, you know, work harder to just get through to the same place where you are. And I don't disagree with that. Like I don't disagree with any of what he's saying. I think that the issue is like, okay, here, I think the challenge, I think there are basically two challenges for single, whatever, you know, can I just call them like men right now? Can I just use that? And we just know that right now I'm saying that's a shorthand. What can I call us? Spider-Men? There's two challenges, I think, for Spider-Man. Spider-Men. There are 6 challenges for Spider-Man, and they are the Sinister Six. And they are as follows. No, it's, I think there are like 2 challenges for the Spider-Man, okay? Being us. And I think the first challenge is like the thing that John Scalzi brings up, which is like, you do get this feeling as a white man that the culture has become sort of like this father figure where nothing's good enough. Because if I'm going through life on easy mode, what do I do that's good enough to make up for the fact that I, you know, am cheating my way through life by the circumstances of my birth? Like, what do I do that's like, you know what? That is respectable. Like, that is something, you've done something really good. And how do you overcome that? What do you do? What's the ultimate answer there? I don't know. And I think that's what's so tough about it. I think that's one of the big challenges is like, how do you live a life as a Spider-Man that is worthy of that? That is worthy of, you know, if it's basically saying like you're starting much closer to the end than most other people, how do you live a life that then justifies that or makes that seem like it's, I just want to live a life or have done work that I feel like other people look at and say, yeah, that's good. And like, I'm glad he exists and glad he did that. I think that's like the challenge, the real challenge, right? How do you get that validation as a person? How do you get validation as a person or for work you've done that overshadows the pre-built-in validation of the circumstances of your birth? That's what I see as like the one big challenge. And I think the other big challenge is, you know, and John Scalzi in his thing too said something that I think is a lot like what I've said, which is basically like, so, you know, he did a follow-up and it was an FAQ kind of thing. And it's like, so what do we do next? And he says, well, that's up to you, isn't it? What I'm doing is pointing out a thing. What you do with that thing is your decision. That said, here's what I do. Recognize it. Work to make it so the more difficult settings in life become closer to the one I get to run through life on by making those less difficult, mind you, not making mine more so. And that's exactly how I feel, which is like, I don't want to make the world equal by making everyone have a shitty life, right? I mean, to put it in a simple way, I don't think the answer is like, okay, well, this is a very impoverished neighborhood, so we should all live that way. We should all live like we have no money. Or like, this is a neighborhood filled with violent crime. If we just started shooting people in this neighborhood, that would even things out, and so that would be fine. Because that's not really what we want, right? We don't want people to die. We don't want people to be hungry. We want everyone to have it good, not everyone to be equally shitty, whatever. So here's the thing. I think this is the other big challenge for Spider-Man. You know, we had our first big challenge, which is like, how do you make it worthwhile? How do you basically say, like, what do you do with your life to make it justified? The other big challenge, as I see it, is kind of like, I think, you know, it's been discussed a lot lately that white men kind of lack a cultural identity. White people in general. But white men. And Spider-Men. And I think that this is something that's not always going to be true. Like, I think that a cultural identity will develop because it just seems impossible not to, you know, unless we're living in some kind of post-racial utopia, which doesn't seem like it's just around the corner. I mean, who knows? Maybe Trump will get elected and that will cause a complete post-racial utopia. I feel like it's possible because I feel like, you know, if there's one thing that we can all agree on, it's how we feel about that dude. But the thing is, I think eventually there will be some kind of identity. And so here's the challenge is that I refuse to let, you know, I don't know how much impact I have on what that identity is or, you know, how that's going to go down in history. But I refuse to let Spider-Man be given the cultural identity of villain. I refuse to let that be the sort of final word on like what I am, because I'm not a villain. And, you know, I'm not a villain. And, I'm fine being, like, categorized by the circumstances of birth as privileged and easy mode and all that. But I'm not fine with villain. You know, I'm fine with being told, like, you have it a lot easier than a lot of other people. But I'm not fine when someone makes me out to be a villain in a situation where I'm not. And so I think that that's the challenge, is to create a cultural identity other than villain. Because I think that that's kind of, I think if you're a Spider-Man, right now you can kind of be a villain who is against the cause, or you can be an ally who's with the cause and you're like one of the good ones. And I feel like I'm mostly with the cause. Like, I mostly am. It's just when things cross over into me feeling villainized, then I just don't want to sit there and be like, yeah, that's cool. Because it's not cool. I'm not cool with that. So there you go. That's kind of the summary of all this bullshit. So what's the summary, you know, what's the summary? I guess it's just like, hey, my fellow Spider-Men, don't let the shitty of us define us. But also, I would challenge you, if you feel like you don't fit into this group, or if you're hearing what I'm saying and you're just like, I don't agree, like, you are so wrong, you're so horrible. I mean, I would challenge you to spend a week on the internet, going to your normal news sites, going to these sorts of things, and just looking through that lens. Just look, thinking about it that way and seeing what you see. Because I think it might be different than you expect. I could be wrong. I'm probably wrong. Being wrong on the internet, as I said, is kind of my thing. I think that's all I want to say about that. Oh, no, there is one other challenge. And this is one I'm setting for myself personally. I kind of don't want to talk about this kind of stuff on this show anymore. Because I think it's, like, old. I think it's done. And I think that this episode has been the coherentest, soberest, which is to say almost sober, version of how I feel about these things. Which is to say, very aware of, care about, but I just don't think that I'm the voice to talk about these things. I don't think I'm the guy to articulate the problems here. I can save those for the imaginary conversations I have in the shower, where I'm always very smart, even though I'm naked. And wet, soaking wet and naked. I think that those are best left there. And here is better left for other more fun, more hilarious topics. I can't decide. I have two potential topics. One is Meternity, and one is a pretty good email I got. Excuse me. Like I said, I'm almost sober, so I've only just had, like, most of a beer. I got this article, Poonmaster Flex. By the way, I'm writing a thing right now for myself to put on the website, which is, like, why Pinterest workouts for women are total horseshit. Have you all seen this? Are you guys, like, a part of this? Like, you'll get on Pinterest, there'll be a picture of some lady's abs and, like, crotch, and it's like, look how tight her abs are. Don't you want to be like this? Here's how you do it. And it's fucking crazy talk. And so this is, like, one of the articles that I was scent, which is 101 ways to lose a pound. So this is, you know, one of these listy things that just says, like, here's how you could lose a pound, right? Diets rarely work. And why? We want to lose weight and we want to lose it fast. Our advice on how to shed pounds? Instead of racing to the finish line, whether it be to drop 5 pounds or 50, try a more tactical and realistic goal. Lose 1 pound, then repeat. Try one of these tips or try all 101 over the course of a few months for the body makeover you've always wanted. So here are some of the things that they put on here. And they have these, like, well-photographed, very skinny chicks all over this. And this is such a weird thing. Like, when I read, when I see, like, a workout book for dudes, if it's, like, a shredded, oiled-up dude in the gym, like, this is the dude version of this, right? Is you'll look at, like, muscle and fitness. I almost said read. Like, you can fucking read that. There's no reading in there. But you see it, and it'll be an oiled, tanned, muscle-up dude whose hair is fucking perfect. And he's in a gym, but it's, like, all dark in the gym except the spotlight on the guy. And you're just like, okay, this is, I know how photo shoots work, and this is fucking crazy looking. All right, let's see what we've got here. 45-minute jog at a 10-mile pace. 10-minute mile pace. Yeah, I guess you could lose a pound. 60-minute cycling session. 90 minutes on the elliptical, 50 on the Stairmaster, 70 of resistance training, 45-minute breaststroke swim, 45 minutes of treading water. I gotta say, like, if, okay, so far, we're up to number 7, and it's like 101 ways to lose a pound. 45 minutes of treading water? That's forever. I would die. Like, I think if a boat went down and I was treading water, I would be able to survive 10 minutes or something like that. I think when I was in the Scouts, you had to get this swimming merit badge, and it was fucking dumb because you, like, get in the pool with all your clothes on and swim, and then you have to, like, tread water for, like, 5 minutes. It is an eternity. A 2-hour walk at a moderate pace. I think I'd be happier with the pound in the 2 hours. Like, you can put on a pound, but you get 2 hours of life. That seems like a good bargain. A 1-hour Zumba class or a 2-hour power yoga class. Let's see, a 90-minute Pilates class, 1-hour bar class, ballet-inspired sessions that slim and tone the body with pulsing movements. Okay, fuck you. 1 hour of dancing. Head to a studio or round up the girls for a night out. I'm going to tell you right now, in an hour of dancing, I lose a fuck of a lot more than a pound. Now, granted, that's mostly water weight from sweat. And, you know, but when you're just, like, punch dancing like crazy at a wedding, you lose a lot of weight. Now, here's the rub, 1 hour of dancing. In order to dance for 1 hour, I'm going to need a minimum of 4 alcoholic beverages. So you need to be careful what you're drinking, I suppose. 65 minutes on the ski slopes. 50 minutes of cross-country skiing. Now, see, that makes no sense. 65 minutes of downhill skiing or 50 of cross-country. Well, I'll take the 65 of just fucking standing there and letting the skis take me down the mountain. 40-minute jump rope session. Again, if you've ever skipped rope as an adult, I know as a kid you probably did it, but as an adult, like as a serious workout, 5 minutes is forever. 40 minutes of jumping rope, you're like an elite fitness dude. 70 minutes fist fight with the punching bag. Word of advice, you may want to break this one up into 2 sessions to protect your knuckles. Yeah, 2 35-minute sessions. That's 70 minutes is longer than a boxing match, is it not? I believe it's 12 3-minute rounds. Let's see. How long is a boxing match? Three rounds of 3 minutes with a 1-minute break. Oh, 12 rounds that are 3 minutes long. Okay. So I was correct, and that is longer than a professional boxing match. Yeah. Also, no. 3 hours of shopping. Now, to get the most out of your opening your wallet, skip the escalators and hit the stairs like Hayden Panettiere. who is, I don't even know. This it links me to an article about how Gwyneth and other stars stay slim, which I guess they do 3 hours of shopping. Where are you shopping? What are you, you're, okay, hold on. It takes 70 minutes of punching the heavy bag to lose a pound or 3 hours of shopping. So basically just a little more than twice as long of shopping equals 70 minutes punching the heavy bag. I don't know which one of those activities you're doing wrong, but you're doing one of them horribly wrong. 50 minutes of hula hooping. Okay. 50 minutes of shoveling snow. Again, have you ever shoveled snow? There's no fucking way that hula hooping is the equivalent of shoveling snow. 40 minutes of martial arts. 40 minutes on the rock climbing wall. A 50-minute beach volleyball game. Again, beach volleyball, you're drunk. You don't even know. 60 minutes on the rowing machine. 90-minute horseback ride. Come on. 90 minutes kayaking. 2.5 hours golfing, but make sure you carry the clubs. Okay. So that's not golfing. That's hiking with metal rods. 2.5 hour hike. Two and a half hours golfing, but carry the clubs. I literally said that's hiking, and then it's a 2.5 hour hike. God fucking damn it. 2 hour round of tennis. Wait a second. 45 minutes of jumping rope. Didn't we already have this? 40 minute jump rope session. 45 minutes of jumping rope. Oh, you doubled up, you fucking idiot. You piece of shit. 60 minutes surfing. 2.5 hours bowling. Redonk. You eat more cheese fries bowling than you do by just doing nothing. That should be my weight loss tips. Instead of bowling, don't do anything, because then you won't have a beer and cheese fries. Here's some food and drink swaps. Ditch half of your spaghetti for spaghetti squash. It's gross. Skip the burrito and order a taco salad instead. Or keep the tortilla and opt for fish instead of beef. Swap out eggs for egg whites when you're craving an omelet. These are not good. Love the Starbucks Grande Caramel Frappuccino? No, I don't. Swap out brown rice or quinoa. Ugh. Ugh. Enjoy chicken This says 39. Enjoy chicken but without the period. Well, I'll never know. Skin? Is that what it's going to say? Without the skin? The flavorful part? Peanut butter smoothie. Oh, satisfy your sweet tooth by swapping 2 Reese's peanut butter cups for 1 mini. I like how this is like, well, just, you know, eat less shit. That's shit. Trade in a cappuccino for a regular cup of coffee. Switch to your blah, blah, blah. I don't want to read all these. These are dumb. These are just like, eat less stuff. It's just, all this is just eat less things, you know. Oh, if you're eating a sandwich, do less eating. Oh, here's some lifestyle tips. Cut out one thing at a time. Spend time around like-minded people. Oh, yeah. Nothing is more fun than talking to people about weight loss. Oh, God. Ugh. What a deep, good conversation that is. Drink a lot of water before your meal. Keep a food journal. You know what's funny about this? I feel like it's been a long time and I can just talk about this now. You know, I was close with someone who had a terrible eating disorder. And from this, I learned many of the tricks of the trade, right? Like here's what you can do to kind of eat less food. You know, for example, like chewing gum is an appetite suppressant, right? And so I kid you not, I saw like The Biggest Loser and, you know, these trainers are advocating these behaviors like chew gum so that you don't eat food, drink water so that you're less hungry and all this stuff. And I was like, these people are putting into these fatzos the habits of people with eating disorders. That's fucked up, man. It's like almost like they studied, you know, the DSM whatever, And then they're like, oh, yeah, let's do this. Is good. This is a fucking good idea. Oh, just go sprint up a hill. Sleep. Thank God. Yeah, I need to sleep more. That's for damn sure. I love sleeping. I love sleeping. Guys, I went to bed at like 11 last night, before 11. Because I think I might be dying. That's really the only thing I can come up with, is that I'm dying and my body is just sort of slowly shutting down. It's the only thing that makes any sense for me. All right, everybody. I think we're done. I think we've done it here. I think we've made our points and given you some tips on losing weight, ladies. Because I think it's about time, don't you? All right. We'll see you next time. I'm the rich ass nigga. See, I've been a loser just about all my life. Type to trying to turn a hoe to a housewife. What do you expect? I give respect and feel for a hoe. Niggas keep in check. I'm far from hard, emotionally scarred. On Pico Boulevard, I was regarded as a retard. I make myself sick, get on my own nerve. Immature, insecure, grown up nerd. Half an MC on a label that's unstable. Chopping Bliggy on the table. Who am I kidding? Who am I fooling? When they be like, what's up, Fat Lip? And I say, cool them. Who am I kidding? Who am I fooling? When they be like, what's up, Fat Lip? And I say, cool them. Who am I kidding? Who am I fooling? When they be like, what's up, Fat Lip? And I say, cool them. Who am I kidding? Who am I fooling? When they be like, what's up, Fat Lip?